Here it's more, I would say, comfortable inside the old National Bank studio. I'm Jeff Meller along with Brian Hanley as we fill in for Cap and Jay Hood on the Friday after Thanksgiving. Hope you had a fabulous holiday and hope you're enjoying an extended weekend as we get set for Bears and Jets on Sunday. Of course, we've got the Bulls tonight. We were just touching on there a little bit. We've got MLB free agency. Wonder if anybody will make a decision and start to move the beyond the nominal players, if you will. Bri, we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But Bears and Jets on Sunday after the three-pack of games we saw yesterday. What stood out to you from the games that we consumed on Thanksgiving? Was there anything that jumped out at you after yesterday's affairs?
I think, you know, you mentioned it earlier in the show, is that the couple of those games were double-digit point spreads, right? Mm-hmm. And they ended up being much more competitive. And that's really been kind of the league because you said it. I mean, Buffalo Bills have come back to earth quite a bit compared to where they were first month of the season. And the quarterback's got an issue he's dealing with, an elbow issue. And there are surprising teams. I think the Cowboys are certainly in that group. I mean, Mike McCarthy was probably on the list of first coaches to be fired this season, and now he's in the coach of the year conversation, and that's with Dak Prescott being out. So it's been, I mean, I was in a survivor pool, and I actually lasted maybe the first 8 weeks of the season, and anyone who took the surefire quote-unquote teams got eliminated in the first 3 weeks. And so that's been the crazy kind of NFL season that it's been, right? I mean, you thought you knew certain things going into the season, and you really didn't. I mean, there the great teams like Tampa, you know, the Tom Brady also looks human. Aaron Rodgers, who knows what's going on in Green Bay? It's been as crazy as the NFL season can be. This one is one for the history books.
It's going to be interesting, and certainly I think the NFC, the way it's shaking out, it's going to be up for grabs. There's, you know, the Eagles got out early, but they've come back to the pack a little bit. Mm-hmm. They look like they're a team that could be gettable in the playoffs, especially because I don't know how much people still they kind of want to see it from Jalen Hurts before they go ahead and crown him. The one thing I'll say is, and you mentioned the survivor pools. I know a lot of people were sweating out the Bills yesterday. If they were, you know, that was a lot of people were on the Bills yesterday because they had kind of held out with them, and they were the clear pick for a lot of people this week against the Lions. And if you were able to hold on to them this far into the season, this looked like the spot, certainly. And especially because you thought, hey, they didn't have to fly in on a short week. They had this weird situation where they were actually in Detroit before the Lions were, right, getting set for this game. So it was an oddity for sure, and yet they had to fight tooth and nail just to get the win yesterday in that first game. You mentioned, too, Mike McCarthy, the curiosity surrounding him. You know, I was having a conversation, actually, and with my neighbor, who's a diehard Cowboys fan, Izzy Villarreal, and his wife, Monica. Shout out to them. They are the biggest Cowboy fans I know. And the one thing, you know, with Mike McCarthy, not sure if, even if you're right, he definitely is in contention for Coach of the Year, right? But I wonder if the Cowboys flame out in the, like, I feel like the playoffs may be the only thing that truly matters when all is said and done.
Jones, yeah.
Exactly, because the way they went down last year against the 49ers was a debacle, right? But to Jerry Jones's credit, or I guess it will wait to be seen, but I'll give him credit in that he wasn't so knee-jerk, even though I probably would have been. He thought it was important to keep McCarthy there for another year and see how it plays out. And he's been rewarded with a good team so far this year. But if it goes poorly in the playoffs yet again, and with somebody like Sean Payton waiting on the sidelines, right, it certainly seems like Mike McCarthy could win Coach of the Year. And if they go one and done in the playoffs, he could be out very quickly, nevertheless.
No, that'd be so Dallas. That'd be so Jerry Jones. And in some respects, you know, Jerry's got the biggest ego. And I love the fact that he has a press conference post-game before the coach does, usually.
Mm-hmm.
In some respects, you'd love to have that kind of owner here in Chicago, right? For any team that has that, his name is so identified with the franchise, and winning is the only thing. And, you know, he built that palace to himself down there, the AT&T, you know, monstrosity. And you would love the fact that he's, you know, are they going to get Odell Beckham now, right? They were talking about that throughout the game, you know, who's recruiting him. I don't know what's, you know, how much he's got left in the tank, but they're in every conversation. And it's like kind of like in baseball now, the Padres are in every conversation. You know, Juan Soto, yeah, we can get him. Aaron Judge, sure, why not? Let's talk. We're in a major market, and you just, if that's the exception these days, right? That you know, Jed Hoyer is going to spend money intelligently. Well, he says that. Well, I would hope he would do that, whether it's a backup or a utility player versus a superstar shortstop. I hope you're spending it intelligently, but, you know, go ahead and spend it. There's an idea.
No, it's a great point. Jerry Jones, he's an easy target oftentimes, especially nationally, where he will offer up a sound bite on a week-to-week basis for you, right? And so, especially with that southern drawl, it's very easy to kind of make fun of him and, you know, discuss the Cowboys not having won a Super Bowl since the run in the 90s when Jimmy Johnson won a couple. And then, of course, Barry Switzer won a third with Jimmy Johnson's players. But it's undeniable. I think any person would tell you who follows the sport closely would tell you Jerry Jones, there is, you know, he wants to win above all else, right? Like, he's not letting the financials get
in the way. He might not know how to do it, but I mean, he wants to. There's never a rebuild. We're going to tank for 3 years and check back with me. Or, you know, this is how we do things. The White Sox don't give out $100 million contracts or 4-year deals. And you know, Tom Ricketts is more interested in buying a soccer team now than he is winning another World Series. It's Jerry Jones. I mean, the ego goes right to the private plane with the big star on the tail, right? I mean, everything's got to be about his brand and him. And whether he's successful or not, it's not for lack of thinking big and spending big, even if it doesn't always turn out, or rarely it does turn out. But you know that he wants to. And it's never like, oh, we can just be in the bottom third and let's go for a draft pick.
No. You know that above all else, the Cowboys are trying to win football games, trying to win a championship. And that certainly is, you're not sure that that's the number one priority amongst a lot of the teams here in this city. And so that is frustrating when you really drill down and say, okay, you know, yeah, it's funny. It's funny to laugh at the Texan. But the reality is, I think we all wouldn't mind if Jerry Jones was heading our football team, because, yeah, you know where the priorities are with him and his team. In the division, the Vikings late night, if you maybe you were already in a tryptophan-induced sleep late last night, the Vikings hold on to beat the Patriots in Minnesota. Kirk Cousins is he's munching on turkey legs, courtesy of the NBC crew, as they carry on the John Madden tradition. He was sharing it, of course, with Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. And I'll tell you, Bri, he's like, you know who's getting the ball in the Minnesota offense, and you're trying to stop him. And that's the true thing is, up against the Patriots, it was interesting to see Cousins, and I know Jefferson mentioned it on the post game. He mentioned, like, Cousins gave him the opportunity to go win 50-50 balls, and Justin Jefferson is that good where he'll do it. He goes for 9 catches, 139 yards, and a touchdown, and feasts on Thanksgiving. He carried around a turkey leg, but he did not partake because, as he mentioned on the broadcast, he had the grills in, so he was sporting the getting those teeth all fixed up nicely. So Justin Jefferson was carrying the turkey leg, but he was not eating it on display, although Adam Thielen and Kirk Cousins certainly were eating enough for him. They covered him. Don't worry about it. But the one thing I was longing for as a Bears fan watching all day long, you saw it with Jefferson. You also saw it late in the game when they needed it most with the Bills and Stephon Diggs, the guy who actually Justin Jefferson has replaced quite nicely. But the Bills, their offense immediately took off the year they traded for Stephon Diggs. And even in Dallas, he's not
quite...
Exactly. He's not quite to their level, but he's still very good. CeeDee Lamb, and, you know, maybe it's partially too because they're such a good running football team with Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott getting the hard yards. CeeDee Lamb is a difference maker as well. I'm looking at those guys and I'm saying, you know what? Each one of those players is a significant number one wide receiver. And boy, oh boy, could Justin Fields really use one of those? If they're picking third overall, where they currently are in the NFL draft order, I think you seriously have to consider getting that number one wide receiver, especially because of what we were talking about earlier. There's still uncertainty surrounding Chase Claypool. And even if Chase Claypool, you know, reaches his absolute height, I don't know if he'll ever be anywhere close to the level that a Diggs, a Jefferson, or a CeeDee Lamb is.
No, I would say probably not, but he's certainly a guy who could be 1A or number two. But I'm with you. Go get a difference maker like that. And Lamb yesterday was everywhere, right? There were a couple that were called back.
Yes.
That he came down with. So
yeah, no, he went over 100 yards, and he could have had that late touchdown that was, you know, he just barely with the heel, just didn't get the second foot down. But certainly he was a monster yesterday. And, you know, I think right now it looks like Quentin Johnston out of TCU is the, you know, he's the guy who everyone's saying in the draft order, if he's going to be the top wide receiver off the board. He's 6'4", 215. He is a freak. Now, I don't know, you know, how many people have watched TCU closely this year, because they're not one of the traditional powerhouses. And even though the Horned Frogs have been good for years, they're not in the class amongst the other, you know, SEC and sure. Big Ten elites. So he may be flying under the radar a little bit for football fans who don't follow college football closely. Man, I would love for the Bears to go get a guy like him if they're picking high, and just fix that problem once and for all for Justin Fields, knowing, hey, we finally got that guy. And then, oh, by the way, now that frees up Darnell Mooney to not have to have so much on his shoulders. And maybe Chase Claypool can be a complimentary piece. The idea of getting a wide receiver, what we saw, you know, guys like what we saw yesterday, that intrigues me a lot as a Bears fan.
Yeah, and then go get a left tackle and maybe a right tackle and maybe a couple guards. Tevin Jenkins might be still the guy. I don't know. But you got to settle on five and protect the quarterback too. So I'm with you, though. If you're going to throw the ball for any time in the near future, you got to have a wide receiver that you can count on. And, you know, they don't have that guy yet, but it also doesn't seem like they have the inclination to throw the ball on a regular basis either.
Yeah, and we'll, you know, I guess we'll, throughout the show, we'll continue to talk about Justin Fields and whether or not he'll start on Sunday. It does seem like that's much more of a possibility than we initially anticipated, at least entering the week. We heard on Wednesday, the way Fields was talking, it maybe, if you wanted to read into it, it maybe didn't sound like he was in the best of shape. But if he does start to feel better, it seems like both Fields and Eberflus and maybe the Bears organization as a whole would like to get him back out on the field. But yes, I want that wide receiver to start developing chemistry with Justin Fields as soon as possible. That elite wide receiver. I mean, look at it. Ja'Marr Chase with Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, right? Mm-hmm. Like the moment that they drafted Chase, who had the experience with Burrow in LSU, all of a sudden they're running wild. They're in their first Super Bowl in forever last year. Oh, by the way, Jaylen Waddle and Tua Tagovailoa in Miami. They had a connection back in Alabama. Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith. And now it doesn't mean that you can't go and add, because look, both the Eagles and the Dolphins added A.J. Brown and Tyreek Hill to those wide receivers. So I guess the long way of saying, it's not just the one wide receiver. You usually need multiple wide receivers. So if we find out that Chase Claypool is better than what we've seen the last few weeks, and boy, he better be better than that. But if he can get close to that level that he was at with Pittsburgh, it's still probably not going to be enough. But if you can all of a sudden add an elite wide receiver to that crew, maybe you have the makings of something. Just the way what was going through my mind of, I should have been thankful yesterday all day, Brian, but all I was thinking about was what I don't have on the Bears.
Yeah, you're lustful. Hey, could I have one of those wide receivers, please? Where do you get that?
Yeah, I'm so fortunate to have all this in my life, and still all I can think about is what I don't have, and that's a wide receiver on the Bears roster. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. We're in for Cap and Jay Hood. Up next, well, let's keep the theme going. What don't we have on the north and south side for our baseball teams? We'll talk about that next here on ESPN 1000.
Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Jeff Meller, Brian Hanlon hanging out with you here on Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 this Black Friday. Will the Chicago Cubs and Chicago White Sox be looking for a discount on the free agency rack today? My bet is the White Sox will be, as they always seem to be. I'm not sure that the Cubs can actually stand to look for discount bargains, Bri, because I think they would be good if they go ahead and actually add a marquee item, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't they get one of the shortstops out there again this year? And I don't want to believe anymore because Jed makes it sound like they're not going to spend wildly, but intelligently. And yet I see Carlos Correa's name connected to the Cubs pretty much every time I read a free agent story, right? Why couldn't Carlos Rodon look good in a Cubs uniform if you want to bolster that starting staff? Aaron Judge, I remember John Heyman about, I don't know, a month or two ago, put out his odds for the five teams that would be leading the pack in the Aaron Judge sweepstakes. And I think he had the Yankees re-signing him like at 1-9. He basically was a slam dunk. But the Giants were in there, and because he grew up near San Francisco and all that. But why aren't the Cubs in those conversations, or at least they have the wherewithal? And Jeff, last year they had the lowest attendance on average since 1997, you know, but for the pandemic years. So,
no, it's a great point, Bri. Like, Aaron Judge, now, yeah, it seems like most likely you would. It's hard to envision the Yankees letting him get away, right? He has, and it's funny because I brought this up years ago, saying that like he had the best makeup to potentially become the face of baseball because of his size and the lovable giant that he was. And I said this years ago, and this was back when Mike Trout was still living it up in anonymity as much as he can because he loves to do so in L.A. playing for the Angels. But this was also before Shohei Ohtani had really kind of put together his MVP season. But the reality is Aaron Judge really untapped all of his potential this past year. And now, you know, I don't know if it was fueled by the fact that he didn't like the offer he received, the final offer that the Yankees made to him. And now it seems like the Giants are actually in play. They're setting up meetings so that he could talk to Steph Curry and what it's like to, you know, play in the Bay Area. And no, but that's why can't the Cubs be involved in those conversations? Like, you would think that a team that is absolutely in need of somebody to become the face of their franchise, fine, maybe your current status wouldn't be enough to really lure Aaron Judge to Chicago, although I think ultimately the cash will probably be the determining factor above all else. But nevertheless, why not at least be in play for that, right? Make him turn you down and be the reason and make him say, you know what, I'm just not happy with, you know, the roster where you're at as an organization. And so that's the reason I'm saying no right now, because I don't think you guys are totally ready to win. But make him turn you down. Don't just be a passive watcher of what's going on in free agency when you're sorely missing that phrase, that face of your franchise after you've, you know, dismissed everybody from the 2016 World Series champs.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm with you, Aaron Judge, and that stadium too. What would those home run records look like at that point? The guy is
he could set his sights on the National League home run record now there that he's go. The AL home run record leader.
But I mean, you're spot on. I mean, the guy, he would own this town, right? Assuming he continued to do what he's been doing. And I know there was speculation around the Yankees that when the Yankee fans were booing him in the postseason because he was scuffling, that might go into his decision-making process. But I'm with you. The money is going to be the ultimate decision-maker for him, unless the money is equal. And then he's probably going to handpick a team that he feels is close to winning the whole thing. And that wouldn't be the Cubs, but they should put an offer on the table that would make it very difficult for him to turn down. I'm with you, because they got nothing, but they bought that team for what, $850 million, give or take, and it's worth well north of $4 billion right now. And if they actually put it on the market, they might get five.
Just a staggering number. There's no doubt about it. But to what you mentioned earlier, you know, maybe the Ricketts, now that the Glazers are interesting in obtaining or are selling Man U for at least $7.5 billion. Maybe the Rickets have turned their attention to spending billions on a soccer club as opposed to millions on the face of a franchise of their baseball team. It's a great point. You wonder where the Ricketts' interest totally is right now. You know what they're totally invested in. I don't know. It's curious to me. Meanwhile, the White Sox, we know that they're never really looking to break the bank. They're looking to tell you about how they have the best offers time and time again. But ultimately, the players never seem to want to take their, quote, best offers because they're not necessarily the best when it comes to guaranteed money. We know that from the history with Manny Machado, who, you know, in San Diego, I think has over the last couple of years showed you what the White Sox wanted, why they were in on him. He's paid off for the Padres, certainly. But then now there's plenty of marquee players available right now, Bri, and the White Sox, it doesn't sound like they're going to be in on any of these high priced players, but they certainly should be. I mean, Carlos Correa, he would look good in a White Sox uniform. Trey Turner, I know that's a pipe dream, but like, Trey Turner's versatility would make him a perfect target for the White Sox, especially if you like when they truly were in on Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. But it doesn't seem like the White Sox, Jerry Reinsdorf, has any real intentions of spending big in this current free agent market. Well,
Jesse will tell you there's like four things the White Sox don't do, and it's long-term contracts. It's $100 million or more in said contracts. You can't. And forever, I mean, I go back to when I was covering the White Sox and Ron Schuler was the GM. And at that point, the franchise, the team policy was no more than 3 years contract for a pitcher because of injury.
I remember. Right? Oh, of course.
So we were down in Louisville for the winter meetings. And Greg Maddux was just leaving the Cubs and on the market. And he was... You had offers from the Braves and the Yankees to the point where Gene Michael was the GM for the Yankees at the time. Yeah, Stick was driving Greg Maddux around New York to find him a nice place to stay, spend some of that money they were going to give him. And so they had 5-year deals on the table, right? Mm-hmm. Both Atlanta and the Yankees. And so we're down at the winter meetings, and Ron Shuler's lighting up one of his cigarettes like he always did. And he said, "Well, you know, we're in on Maddox." And I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, we're talking to Greg Maddox." I'm like, "There's like 5 years and $40 million or whatever it was at the time was big money." I'm like, "Well, how are you in on Greg Maddox if you're only going to give him 3 years?" "Well, I mean, we're not going to give him 5 years, but you know, we're talking to him." I'm like, "Well, I could be talking to him too, but there's 5 years on the table from two different teams with more money. You had no shot of getting him." So when you're operating with those kind of constraints and you can't be in on him. I mean, I don't know what Ron thought he was doing, but Greg Maddux wasn't coming at the White Sox for 3 years when he had two more guaranteed years from two different teams.
Same old song and dance. Quickly, Jim in Ukrainian Village, let's wrap up our baseball conversation. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Jimmy?
Hey, you guys, you know, we got to start considering that players don't want to play in Chicago. I was at a charity event with Josh Harrison and talked to him for quite some time. Wonderful guy, by the way. I mean, he's played with a lot of players, and he was pretty clear that this is not a choice destination for Major League Baseball players. It just isn't. He said, the social media is awful. We can read. He kept telling me over and over again, we can read, guys. We can read. But two, it's just, it's not a place to bring your family. It's not a place. This is not a strong destination for Major League Baseball players, and we've got to come to those. You know, the Cubs are like anybody. They could spend with God, right? Sure. Everybody knows that. Yep. There's a reason they're not getting some of these calls. There's a reason they're not involved in all of this. White Sox are the same, right? You know, who wants to play with that team? It's dysfunctional.
I don't know if it's really a city. I think the truth is that I don't think the Cubs or White Sox oftentimes are the highest bidders in the situation. You know, and again, the Cubs, while they maybe in the past, you saw it. Listen, John Lester, Jason Hayward. Jason Hayward was in studio with Waddle and Sylvie less than a month ago talking about how great the city is. They can attract marquee free agents. Now, obviously, Hayward didn't work out the way everybody would have liked. But I think the problem for the Cubs is that where they're at in terms of their winning cycle, right? You need to prove to free agents that you're going to be competitive more so than, you know. And listen, there's plenty of great places to live in the city of Chicago. Like, there's crime all over the place. The reality is, if you want to, you know, I, I, I reject the notion that the city is the reason people aren't choosing to come here. I think it's more about the organizations as a whole, personally, Bri.
Yeah, and look, on the north side in particular, you talk to Jason or John Lester, who bought beers for every Cubs fan as a thank you. Remember, you know, he just told you to go into a list of six bars or whatever and tell him put it on his tab. When it works out and when you immerse yourself into the culture of this city, you know, the Bulls have been fighting this kind of reputation forever. They can't get free agents, right? Because they're not throwing big money around. And they've had a dysfunctional front office forever before this regime. And so I'll buy that argument. It's just not an attractive place to play. But when the Cubs are winning or when the Bears are winning or when the Bulls are winning, then this is as good a sports market and as good a city as you're going to find to live in. And when you're getting paid the money you would be expected to be paid at that level. The White Sox business model, and I've said this with Mark Zander a couple of times, someone I know who's in the know, said that anyone who invested in the White Sox back when they bought the team in 1981 or so, I think it was, but they spent $19-20 million. The Tribune bought the same, you know, spent the same amount of money for the Cubs at the time. So anyone who was in on the ground floor with investing with Jerry Reinsdorf and his group, and he doesn't own the team. He's the chairman. He's the managing partner. But there are a lot of he's not even the majority owner, right? But in Jerry, they trust because that team's worth $2 to $3 billion on a $19 million investment. And I was told there's a reason they don't care if they sell out 40,000 every day and sell as many hot dogs and fill up the parking lots, because they're going to get paid when the team is sold. And then they'll all get these huge checks from basically a long-term, you know, T-bill investment.
No doubt about it.
And they know that because they know, and Jerry's very prudent. And as a fan, it's maddening because you want to see 40,000 people and you want to see your team in a Chicago market going after, and not only going after Manny Machado, but actually landing him or Bryce Harper. Yep. But that's just not... That's not what they do, and they're not going to apparently change that plan right now.
He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller, in for Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.
Listening to Cap and Jay Hood at home is easier than setting your coffee maker.
This picture of domestic happiness is missing something.
Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
What a way to start the day.
Cap and Jay Hood.
On Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Because it's Friday.
It's time for the Friday Folder.
And you ain't got shit to do.
On the Cap and Jay Hood Show.
Every Friday on the Cap and Jay Hood Show, they open up the Friday Folder to let you know stories that they missed during the week that they were not able to get to because Cap yaps too much. No, that's not true. Just because they were involved in deep conversation that they just couldn't get around to it. So that is when the boys share with you topics that are stories that they thought were worth mentioning. Charlie Bevins on the other side of the glass catches us up on what we missed this week, Bri. And Meller and Brian Hanley in for Cap and Jay Hood, by the way, today.
Yeah, there's been obviously a lot of World Cup, Meller, and since you're here, I figured we would start there. A lot of upsets. Saudi Arabia beat Argentina, and then Germany lost to Japan. Is this common? Like, is the World Cup kind of feature a March Madness quality to it, where there's just random upsets kind of up and down the first few days?
I would say not usually that significant. Now, Germany has been, they're a prolific soccer nation, but over the last few World Cup cycles, actually the last one, they didn't get out of the group stage. So they've kind of been a little bit on the decline over the last couple, 4 to 6 years. So Germany wasn't as stunning as the Argentina loss to Saudi Arabia was. The one result that happened early this morning, though, by the way, Iran beat Wales 2-0. And the reason that's significant, Bri, is because now the United States doesn't really necessarily need a result against England today, because U.S. takes on Iran in the final game of their group stage in a few days from now. Now, obviously, the U.S.-England game is getting a lot of hype. That game is at 1 o'clock today. But the U.S. doesn't necessarily need the result as long as they can beat Iran in the final game of their group stage, because Iran beat Wales today. So that is, I think, good news for the U.S. to get out of the group stage. They just need to beat Iran in that final game, and they should be good, assuming, of course, that Wales doesn't upset England in that final game. But that's one that I would be surprised to see. But you never know. I would say, Charlie, the upsets, the Argentina one was a big one, so we did not expect that.
You know, I was much more interested in the World Cup last go around. This one got off on a wrong foot for me when the head of FIFA started moralizing and lecturing and pointing fingers because, immigrant labor, slave labor built on, a lot of guys died building those stadium palaces in Qatar or Qatar. Or
yeah,
the New York Times had a whole story on how you pronounce it, and no one could agree to on a way of pronouncing it. Qatar, Qatar, maybe something else. So I haven't watched a minute of it. I did enjoy it last time, but I just FIFA is now right up there with the Olympic Committee that has been corrupt forever. It has had their hands out and just worried about money and stuffing money into their accounts and everything else. So I mean I've soured on the Olympics a long time ago, and as much as I want to embrace soccer, this one just reeks a little bit too much for me.
It's completely fair. And yes, the head of FIFA is a clown.
Yeah.
Much worse thoughts than that. However, and to your point, an estimated 6,000 to 7,000 migrant workers died in the building and construction of Qatar, however you want to say it, in the projects. It's horrifying. I am such a huge soccer fan.
I know.
That I can't not watch the World Cup. But you're absolutely right. It is a World Cup soaked in blood. And so I have no problem saying every time that I mention the World Cup, that let's not neglect the fact that, and don't let countries like Qatar, Qatar, and FIFA being complicit, let them sports wash away what has gone on. You pointed out the New York Times article. I'll mention, too, HBO Real Sports on this past Tuesday did a good 15-minute segment on some of the harsh realities facing the migrant workers and why they choose to leave their countries, which are some of the poorest in the world, just to try and, make a few hundred dollars for their families. It's disgusting, terrible. It's worth mentioning. I hate to get wrapped up in the soccer, but yes, it's horrifying what's going on.
Here's the other thing. Mark Lazarus, who covers the Blackhawks for The Athletic, he tweeted out, I couldn't agree more. He said it's the dumbest thing in sports where only one guy knows how much time's left in a game, in injury time. Just stop the clock, put the time up there, let everyone know what the deal is. So when their 90 minutes are over and they're in injury time, the referee isn't the only one who has any idea how much time's left in the match. I mean, come on, what are you doing here?
Well, I've followed soccer for long enough where stoppage time doesn't bother me because I'm accustomed to it. But
why wouldn't everyone watching know how much time's left? That that was allotted because of the stoppages. It's just one guy in his little clock, and he knows. Okay,
I will say interesting for those who have watched the FIFA World Cup. And you abstaining, completely acceptable, Brian, understandable. But what they've done this go round is they've attempted to account for all the actual stoppage time. In the past, there would be, it's called, amongst at least a nicer way of saying it, scumbag soccer. When people will just writhe on the ground in pain unnecessarily to waste time. Well, in this World Cup, they're doing their best to account for all of the time wasting. And so you're seeing longer and longer amounts of stoppage time at the end of each game, which I think most soccer fans are applauding because finally teams can't just waste time like they have done in the past. All right. We're taking up all the Friday folder time talking about World Cup soccer. I know Charlie's like, what's going on here? You got a couple more for us, Charlie.
I do. How about this one really quick? This is from Rex Chapman on Twitter, obviously very big following. He says, my father has to have, quote, peanut butter salad every Thanksgiving. And it's the recipe is peanut butter and Dole tropical fruit cocktail just stirred together in a bowl. And it looks disgusting.
I've never heard of that.
I mean, peanut butter goes good with lots of fruits.
Elvis liked the peanut butter and banana sandwiches fried or whatever.
The Dole tropical mix is filled with the sugar infused
corn syrup.
The sugar infused corn syrup. So it's a bunch of peanut butter and some more sugar. So I'm sure it tastes scrumptious, although probably not very healthy for you.
We were debating mac and cheese as a side. Okay.
Anything else, Charlie?
Maybe I can save one for the other side. How about that?
All right, we'll do that quickly. And of course, it's Cap and Jay Hood, so we've got the cut of the day next.
It's Cap and Jay Hood on Chicago's Home for Sports. Follow the show on Twitter at Cap Jay Hood. This is ESPN 1000.
Things up here on Cap and Jay Hood. Greeny's up next, and you've got Shay Norling and Jesse Rogers in for Carmen and Yurko today, coming up at noon. And of course, we've got Waddle and Sylvie in for Waddle and Sylvie today. We'll be Dion Miller and Tyler Aki. So I'll be back with Dion Miller on Sunday for your Bears pregame coverage. And Bri, I believe you will be back with Xander before us on Sunday, right?
Correct, sir. We will be there. Yeah.
So there you go. That's your weekend lineup on ESPN 1000. All right, Charlie, we got one more Friday folder story that we did not get to.
Yeah, I just thought this bore mentioning. The Bills yesterday were the first team to win back-to-back games in Ford Field since 2016. There are so many ways to describe Lions' ineptitude.
Yes.
I think that one describes it best.
That's a great bar trivia question. That'll get you a drink. Yeah.
That is absolutely a great stat. And by the way, thank you to Jim Lex, our great listener. He mentioned, I misspoke earlier. I said the Bills beat Detroit to Ford Field because they had the opportunity to play, as Charlie mentioned, for consecutive weeks there. Jim, who's a big Bills fan, mentioned that the Buffalo did return to Buffalo after Sunday's game, and then they returned to Detroit.
Just so a shovel. Yeah,
I just made the assumption, and that was silly. I mean, you know what happens when you assume, Bri. Yeah. So I assumed that the Bills would hang it out in Detroit, but that was not the case. They actually returned to Buffalo before their game on Thanksgiving.
Pick your poison, Buffalo or Detroit.
Your choice. I think I'll go with Buffalo. Yeah. All right.
I've been there.
Let's go with the, you know what? It is always our opportunity to give you the cut of the day on Cap and Jay Hood, courtesy of Chicago Cuts.
Yo.
Yes, it's boring, but it's a sport.
Oh!
Whatever.
Cut it.
It's not boring.
Okay, then you're boring.
All right, cut!
Stuffing? Are you a stuff the bird guy, or the dressing comes on the side because, you know, you think you're going to get some botulism or something if you put it in the cavity of the bird?
Yo.
Yes, it's boring, but it's a sport.
Oh!
Whatever.
It's not boring.
Okay, then you're boring.
All right, cut!
Congratulations, Brian. You were the cut of the day.
At like a side of botulism with my Thanksgiving meal? Thank you.
Yes, yes. Better than a side of debauchery, right? Or I guess actually some would prefer debauchery. Nevertheless, either way. Anything you want to get to before we close it out here? Anything we did not get on your agenda of things to do?
We had a couple of Twitter polls, right?
Yes, yes, we did. Let me see.
Will you be watching the Bears if Justin Fields is not playing Sunday? How'd that turn out?
So as I pull it up as we speak here on the ESPN 1000 Twitter feed, as Brian mentioned, will you watch the Bears play Sunday if Justin Fields does not play? 62% say
the
yes.
Bears.
Yes, they will indeed. And the other poll question that you prompted on ESPN 1000, do you enjoy making Thanksgiving dinner? What do you think this way went?
Jeff misses most of the Detroit game because of all the prep that goes into the Thanksgiving dinner. It was close early on when I checked.
Yes. 55% say yes, they do enjoy cooking dinner and preparing it for Thanksgiving and for all their loved ones, no doubt about it. All right. Well, that does it for us here on Cap and Jay Hood. I'm Jeff Meller. He's Brian Hanley. Thanks to my man, Charlie Bevins, behind the glass for producing us today. And as I mentioned, stick around. Greeny's up next. You've got Shay Norling and Jesse Rogers coming your way at noon today. And then, of course, Dion Miller and Tyler Aki filling in for Waddle and Sylvie. Bri, any last words?
It's been a pleasure, Jeff. Thanks. It's good catching up with you, man.
Always enjoy hosting with you, Bri. Thanks for filling in with me today. Cap'n J Hood back on Monday. Thanks for listening, folks. This is ESPN 1000.
From Chicago?